Welcome back into the program as what is a Monday, and we are finally back on this program after the big 1-2 matchup this last weekend, as we had been counting down for days and days, and finally Alabama and LSU became a reality. It was a 9-6 victory for the number one team in the country, Louisiana State Tigers. Alabama falls at home in a battle of 5 field goals, 15 points total, no touchdowns scored, defense all over the place, as well as flags and penalties and mistakes all over the place for both teams, too. It was kind of a messy game for the most part. David Sears is with me, as he is on Fridays. And, David, just your overall impressions of LSU's 9-6 win.
I definitely think we saw the best two teams in the nation. I forget which article I read, but one of the authors his article was, "I know LSU won the game tonight, but I'm still not sure who the best team is." And I think evenly matched offensively and defensively. LSU had to kick field goals within 30 yards and Bamlin for deep field goals. Alabama had multiple chances to hit big plays, and for some reason or another, they could not execute. LSU capitalized on Bama turnovers and mistakes to be able to get the job done. It was a great game to watch. It was one of the games where you were on the edge of your seat
for
60 minutes, because you knew just one big play could break this game wide open.
Well, and that's the thing. You had two great defenses going at it, and if, you know, Trent Richardson breaks a 70-yard run, or if Spencer Ware or LSU gets the ball to Reuben Randall and he goes for a touchdown, you know, that could have been the difference in the game. So I agree with you. It was a very entertaining game to watch. And Sears, I've been to Alabama games over the years, as you have. I'm not sure I've ever heard Bryant Denny Stadium in more of a fever pitch than it was the other night for that game.
Well, it was just a great environment all around. I've never seen that many people in Tuscaloosa. It was an impressive thing, just a great scene to see all of those people out there on the quad. I mean, it was wall-to-wall people on the quad. You could not move through the quad. It was a great environment. There were even some Texas A&M fans that were tailgating with us, wanting to see what a big SEC football game was like. They were just impressed by the tenacity of the tailgating and then the environment of the stadium. It's like, we've played in front of big crowds before, but this is unbelievable.
Jefferson had a big night for LSU. He was 6 of 10 for 67 yards and also ran the ball a number of times to give them an edge in that category. Trent Richardson carried the ball 23 times and only mustered 89 yards total in the game. Statistically speaking, it was a pretty even game. I mean, if you look down the box score and the overall statistics, it's a dead heat in rushing, passing, time of possession. I think there were like 2 or 3 seconds difference in time of possession. It was just an incredibly close game.
It just shows you how evenly matched the two teams are. And it was a very hard-fought game. As a Bama fan, I was disappointed that we didn't win, but as a football fan, I was glad I got to go there. It reminded me of the heavyweight fights of the 50s and 60s, just two greats going at it, Ali and Frazier, and it was just an impressive display of football defensive ability. I think I saw one guy project that of the two defenses, of the defenders that played, almost 35 of those people will be drafted over the next few years in the draft. It's one of those just crazy, amazing things where you see all the talent that was on the field, and even offensively, with Reuben Randall, Trent Richardson, it's going to be one of those things where you're just going to be so impressed when you look back at this game. It's like, I can't believe this many great players played in one football game.
Well, and you look at the game, too, and obviously the field goals missed for Alabama were a big key, and if they'd made some of those, they would have obviously been in a better position to win the game. But I'm going to take three plays out of the game, and I don't know what your thought. I'll get your thought on this, but I think three plays had the most impact on the outcome of the game. And I'll take the Marquise Mays punt return by Alabama that would have put the ball on the 4-yard line. It was called back for a block in the back. That was a huge mistake because that took them out of field goal range. Well, it put them way away from the end zone. They would have been set up to score had that not happened. I think the interception that maybe should have been called to catch, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I never did see a really good angle of it, but it was, of course, the catch and then non-catch by Alabama's tight end Michael Williams. And then, of course, A.J. McCarron's interception when he threw it and Mo Claiborne made a play. That was LSU making a play and really turning the tide in the game.
It was a great play. AJ, I think, became very gun-shy after that play. It looked like he started to shrink from the moment. I think he's almost there for a great quarterback. He has the tools, but I think his confidence got rattled when he went against such a great defense. I'm not saying he's not going to be a great quarterback, but I think he's definitely got potential. We've seen potential. He's going to have another opportunity because I guarantee Alabama will be in a high bowl game. So he's got a chance to just shine in that big pressure environment. And the way things work out, this season's not done yet. He may have a rematch in New Orleans come January 9th. So anything is possible. Alabama still has a lot to play for, and they just have to remember they have to win out and take care of business. They'll be able to do their part. They can't control their own destiny, but they can influence it.
I agree, and that's the interesting thing about it now. LSU is number one. Alabama falls to third in the BCS standings behind undefeated Oklahoma State, ahead for the time being of an undefeated Stanford. Boise State is behind Alabama, undefeated at fifth. Oklahoma then leads the one-loss teams other than Alabama at six, followed by Oregon at seven, Arkansas at eight, Clemson at 9, Virginia Tech at 10. That's the top 10 of your BCS standings. Okay, here's the interesting question, Sears, and I think everybody knows this. As it stands now, LSU is in control of its own destiny to get to the Atlanta, and then, of course, to get to the national championship if it wins the rest of its games. Alabama is not. If LSU loses the final weekend of the year, which they would be playing Arkansas at home, doubtful that they would lose that game, but if they did, Arkansas plays really well against LSU, they would there would then be a three-way tie in the West, and the winner of the West would be determined by the top two ranked teams in the BCS standings head-to-head, which could be any one of those three teams. That would be a really hard situation to project. Let's just go the hypothetical and say that happens. Then you have chaos in the BCS. Somebody's going to get to play in Atlanta. Then you have two other one-loss teams that don't get to play in Atlanta that are sitting there from the SEC. We could end up having another 2007-like end to this season.
Well, I think you may need to go back to 2008 when you had the Big 12 had a three-way tie for the South Division, yeah, with Texas, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech. And a lot of people felt that Texas was jobbed out of the title shot because they had beaten Oklahoma head-to-head. I think it was wise of the SEC to add that caveat where if you're within five spaces, the top two teams are within five spaces of each other, the head-to-head winner goes. I think that's a good way to do it, to show that the regular season does matter, that BCS isn't everything when it comes to conference standings. And we've got chaos out there waiting to happen. Stanford has to play Oregon, yep, and a possible Pac-12 championship game if they beat Oregon against the feisty, probably Arizona State or UCLA team. Oklahoma still plays Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, I think, still has...
They're going to Texas Tech this weekend.
Yeah, they upset Oklahoma. They play well. They're a pretty consistent team. You never know what they're going to do. It's a Tommy Tuberville team, without a doubt. They could beat the world and then lose to Iowa State the next week. So there's lots of things Alabama can look forward to, but most of it starts with 6:45 this Saturday night. They need to take care of business and go out and dominate Mississippi State. I think they have a better attitude this year after their defeat than they did after last year defeat South Carolina. Alabama seems mad at themselves, yeah, not down in the dumps, but mad that they allowed themselves to make that many mistakes and they know what they have to correct. I think they have the will to win, and all it takes is a couple of losses, and if they take care of business, you never know.
Some other news is out today other than the Alabama and LSU final wrap-up, and that is that yesterday the Southeastern Conference officially announced that Missouri will be the 14th member of the league, and that will start next year. And they will play 8 conference games. That is according to the SEC's public relations people. They will play 8 conference games as opposed to reports that say, that quote, presidents or chancellors or whoever saying that 9 games, that will go to 9 games next year. That would be hard to pull off considering a lot of the non-conference contests are already scheduled and teams have already been paid for next year. That'd be very difficult for them to do. So the SEC putting people at ease, saying we will play 8 games next year. Missouri comes into the conference, and this is what I'm hearing, Sears, that the constant opponents are going to be Alabama, Tennessee, Auburn, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss. Those are all the normal ones. But now they're going to switch it up and play. LSU is going to play South Carolina every year. Florida's going to play Texas A&M, and Missouri is going to play Arkansas because of geographic nature, of course. That's just what I'm hearing. That's not official yet, but Missouri certainly shaking things up in the SEC.
It is a big shakeup, and I understand why they're staying with eight. I do not think many athletic directors would have been fond of going to a nine-game conference schedule, because that means some years you'll have five conference home games, some years you'll have five conference road games. I don't think anybody would really want that to occur. The stay at eight allows you to keep two or three patchy home games and your one big non-conference showdown like Alabama, Michigan this coming year in the Jerry Dome, or the Chick-fil-A Classic, or even if you want to try and do something during the season, like Tennessee did a few years ago, scheduling those games during the season. It'll allow you to keep your rivals from the ACC, like South Carolina, Clemson, Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Florida, Florida State, and now Wake Forest and Vanderbilt has become a rivalry game. I think it's a wise move to stay at eight. It'll avoid a lot of trouble in the long run, and I hope they stay at eight in the long run until eventually they get to 16, then they'll have to kind of expand.
There were other games in the SEC Saturday. Number seven, Arkansas at the time, played number nine, South Carolina. Arkansas won that one 44-28. Mississippi State was all over Tennessee Martin 55-17. By the way, the Arkansas game really put South Carolina in the back seat of the East now. Georgia controls the destiny there if they can win out. Tennessee is 24-0 all over Middle Tennessee State. Florida 26-21 over Vanderbilt. Georgia 63-16 over New Mexico State, and then Kentucky 30-13 over Ole Miss, and that was such a bad loss. Kentucky is so poor this year, and they beat Ole Miss, that today it has been reported that Ole Miss head coach Houston Nutt and athletic director Pete Boone are no longer with the school, so that is a very interesting development.
Well, it's been a long time coming. We've known Houston Nutt was on the hot seat, losing to Kentucky, who is probably, I thought they were the worst team in the SEC, and now you have Ole Miss, who can gladly take that reign. They've lost 12 straight SEC games. They've not been able to look like they have any semblance of a consistent offense. Their defense has been horrendous. They were able to give Arkansas a run for their money. They're bad. I think he's run that program into the ground. He inherited a lot from David Cutcliffe and really had a great amount of talent there. And then
Orgeron.
He inherited a lot from Orgeron and had a great amount of talent there because Orgeron was a heck of a recruiter.
Yeah.
And I think that it was one of those things where he burned too many bridges, he upset so many people, and then when you start losing games, it's not good. And especially in this SEC, especially when you were a middle pack team, now you've gone to the bottom of the pack, or back of the pack, and now there's a chance you may be down there for a while.
Yeah, that's a good point, and it's going to be interesting to see where Ole Miss goes from here. You've heard all the reports, or the rumors about Gus Malzahn, about Alabama's defensive coordinator Kirby Smart, or about somebody else. To me, I think Ole Miss needs to hire a young coach, up and coming, not another Tommy Tuberville, another relapse like he had with Houston Nutt, and they need to hire somebody who is going to build the program. And I take the best example I can find is James Franklin at Vanderbilt. And I know he's only halfway through his first year, but he has totally rejuvenated a Vanderbilt program that has never done anything, really. I think Ole Miss needs a hire like that.
If I'm Ole Miss, I go after James Franklin.
Yeah.
I'll say, look, we're serious about football. Vanderbilt doesn't even have an athletic department. We're going to make sure you have everything you need. Ole Miss is committed to having good facilities. They've recently done a renovation of Vaught Hemingway Stadium. They've put in field turf. They've got a great practice facility, great weight room facility. James Franklin wants to be a football coach. I'd pay him big money. We know that Ole Miss is about football. And let's face it, the SEC West right now, you need to be competitive. Auburn will be back next year. Alabama's probably going to be up there again. LSU has a lot of sophomores and freshmen playing. So it's going to be a very competitive SEC West. Plus, you add in a pretty good A&M team, who looks like they're going to be a dangerous team coming into the SEC. May not win it all right away, but definitely be a factor in it.
And Arkansas?
I think they're going to be exposed. When there's decent competition, I think they'll fade away. Tyler Wilson's a good quarterback, but I don't think he'll be able to play as well as he has this year. He's taking way too many hits. He's getting pounded each year. I know he's got a whole offseason to recover, but I think he's not going to be able to take a pounding like that again.
Well, in Arkansas, too, they have Tennessee at home this weekend, and then for the remainder of the season, they have Mississippi State at home, and then LSU on the road. That is going to be an interesting end to their season. They're up there in the BCS, now rated number 8, but if they continue to win, and of course beat LSU, they'll continue to climb. If not, well, they really have a tough go of it to finish out the season.
Petrino's got them doing well. He can take them to their second BCS bowl, depending on how the chips fall. They definitely feel if the SEC may really push hard for the next time the BCS is renegotiated to say, we need to just go by top 10 teams in the BCS.
Disregard
conference. Go in there if you look at it, SEC's probably going to have, depending on what Arkansas, they could have 3 teams in the top 5. And only 2 of those get you to BCS bowl.
Yeah, that is a stupid rule. They need to because you look at the SEC West. Forget the East. You have the West. And 3 teams could easily qualify as of this point. And what happens, Sears, if Georgia wins the SEC East and then goes on to win the SEC Championship, upsets an LSU or an Alabama or potentially Arkansas, then what? Then you only have one of those teams that gets to go.
I can tell you this right now. Georgia is basically being what Boise is, and that is they're beating up on a really bad conference. They lucked out. They drew State, Ole Miss from the West. Auburn will be a challenge for them.
So you're saying that Georgia has no shot, none whatsoever, of winning the SEC championship?
They have none whatsoever. The defenses they will face, if it's Alabama or LSU, are just way too good. So there's no way Georgia would be in a lot of trouble. Plus, you don't know if they can get the drug test fail by their top 3.
How much of a joke is that? They don't report it until after the Florida game, and so they can suspend them for the big, tough New Mexico State game. And then, they're reinstated because, they've done their time now, so they get to play against Auburn. I mean, that is such a Mark Richt thing to do.
It's shady, but it's college football. It's the environment we live in.
It is what it is. Hey, Sears, thanks a lot for coming in on this Monday. I really appreciate you, or not coming in, but coming on this Monday. Really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me on.
We will talk to him again Friday about the upcoming weekend as we count down to the next college football epic Saturday, but it was a good one. Alabama and LSU final 9-6 in favor of the Tigers. Our full week of Bun Sports programming will be coming your way, so stay tuned and have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow.